entire community. Give what you can to keep it going. It's so important right now. Donate at WJFFradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville, live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York. This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, Dan Hoos from Sullivan County Government is here with a report from the Sullivan County Legislature. And we'll talk to two of the artists participating locally in Upstate Art Weekend at the DVAA. Plus, it's the last day of our summer fun drive. Help us close out the challenges and goals we have for the day. $55,000 our goal. 92% of the way there. Just under $4,000 to raise. Help us at 845-482-4141. WJFFradio.org. Now more than ever, your support will help us stay strong, stay healthy, and stay local. Stay on the air. Donate right now. The news is next.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. President Trump is expected to sign a measure soon, taking back billions of dollars in funding for foreign aid and public media after the House passed it last night, with votes along party lines. The measure takes back $8 billion in foreign assistance and $1.1 billion from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which funds NPR, PBS, and their member stations. House Speaker Mike Johnson supported the measure.
We're going to downsize the scope of government. Government is too large. It does too many things, and it does almost nothing well.
Democratic Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries says the pullback is reckless. The news will impact stations around the country. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which receives federal funds and then distributes them, says some stations could be bankrupt by October. Congress has passed the first major legislation to regulate cryptocurrency. NPR's Rafael Nam reports the bill has been the subject of widespread criticism.
The Genius Act provides rules for a cryptocurrency called stablecoin. It's meant to be safer because companies have to back each stablecoin with real cash. So if a company sells you a stablecoin worth a dollar, it has to keep another dollar in reserve so that it can pay you back whenever you want to cash in your stablecoin. But the real excitement is in their use in global commerce. Companies can send or receive payments in stablecoins almost instantaneously, which can then be easily converted into cash. But critics say the rules adopted by Congress are too weak, and that stablecoin companies should follow the same rules as other financial firms like credit card companies. Rafael Nam, NPR News.
Five men deported by the U.S. to the African country of Eswatini will be held in solitary confinement, according to government officials. Kate Bartlett reports the absolute monarchy has a poor human rights record.
Government spokeswoman Tabile Mdalule told NPR it was unclear how long the deportees would be held in isolation, adding that, quote, it's hard to be specific on when they will be repatriated. The Eswatini government has said the five men will be sent to their home countries of Laos, Vietnam, Cuba, Jamaica, and Yemen. But the U.S. has said that the men were sent to the tiny kingdom neighboring South Africa because their home nations refused to take them back. The U.S. said the men have committed, quote, barbaric crimes, including child rape. Their deportations are part of President Trump's policy to send immigrants to countries that are not their own. His administration has already sent third country deportees to South Sudan and several Latin American nations. For NPR News, I'm Kate Bartlett in Johannesburg.
Wall Street is trading in mixed territory at this hour. The Dow is down 65 points, the Nasdaq up 39, S&P 500 up 10. This is NPR News from Washington. Environmentalists say a new law passed by Brazil's Congress will lead to widespread deforestation in the Amazon. NPR's Kerry Kahn reports Brazil's president hasn't said whether he will sign it into law. That's worrying human right and environmental leaders.
Brazil's influential environment minister has spoken out against the bill that allows fast-tracking of some infrastructure projects. But Mauricio Guetta of the rights group Avaz says if the president signs it or Congress overrides a veto, Brazil's environmental reputation will be damaged just before it hosts this year's United Nations International Climate Conference.
We will no longer be able to be a climate leader, not only this year, but forever, I could say, because this is really the worst bill for us in our history.
Under the bill, small and medium projects with potentially harmful effects could get licenses fast after self-declaring they do not cause harm. Carrie Kahn, NPR News, Rio de Janeiro.
A whip used by Harrison Ford in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade sold at auction for more than $500,000. That comes a day after the Rosebud sled from Citizen Kane went for $14.7 million, making it one of the most pricey props in movie history. The most expensive? The Judy Garland red slippers from The Wizard of Oz, which went for $32.5 million last September. These items sold at a multi-day auction in California that continues for another day. Up next, Macaulay Culkin's knit snow cap from Home Alone, among others. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Imaginable Futures, celebrating the hard work, commitment, and achievements of the 1 in 5 college students who are parents. More at imaginablefutures.com. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. We'll get to our friend Dan Hoos from Sullivan County Government, who joins us every Friday in just a moment. But it's our summer fun drive, our last day of our summer fun drive, and we're very close to making our $55,000 goal. We are 92% of the way there. Joining me now live in the studio is one of our past Board of Trustees presidents, Jim Lomax.
Jim, good morning.
Good morning. And you are here with a special challenge from other past presidents of our board.
Yes, we've been talking about it between the past presidents and officers of the board in the past, and we're challenging listeners to a $2,000 matching fund.
$2,000. I think it deserves this theme from The West Wing. Past Presidents Challenge, past presidents of the board.
Yes.
Call us at 845-482-4141. Donate now, $2,000. So, you know what? If we match the $2,000 from the past presidents of the board with the $2,000 from listeners like you, that's going to put us, I think, at 55 or just near it. I'm not good at math, as you know. 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. What part of that $2,000 can you do? And why do you think it's so important for the past presidents who served so well and were so good at planning for us?
Being a past president or a past officer of this board does not mean that after you leave office that your involvement with the station ends. In fact, it goes on years and years afterwards.
And we make sure it does.
Yes, that's true.
845-482-4141.
But we're looking forward to the support. We'd like to wrap this up today because we have a lot to look forward to going forward into the future.
And I'm glad that you said it that way because a lot of people are waking up to the news this morning that Congress has defunded public radio and public media in general. All of the public television stations, PBS, all of the public radio stations that take NPR and others, rural stations across the country, including ours. And to say it that way is really important because we have a lot to look forward to.
Yes,
this is a hit and it's not great, but we as a community can look forward.
Well, it could be the silver lining, you know.
Why do you say that?
In the fact that business is going to change somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know what that is right now. But I think that we have a short period of time where we are fully funded and we can pay our bills and everything like that. But we have to move forward in getting into a different way of looking at how financing a station like this.
Yeah,
no longer do we have, you know, a $30,000, $130,000 check that's going to come in the mail.
Right.
That ends.
Yeah, and that ends actually this year in Q4, so it's actually happening sooner rather than later. 25% of our budget is impacted there. But, you know, the primary source of funding comes from listeners. So listener support is how we have survived for 35 years and how we will continue to survive and how we look at different business models. There was an interesting thing earlier on the news, I think during Morning Edition today, about you may not think of public radio as having a business model. We do. We have a business models. We have budgets. We've been conservative with our finances. And in fact, past boards have been very judicious about how they invest. And so we do have some reserves there thanks to the planning of our past
board. We don't necessarily want to touch those.
No,
That's like our...
But to know that it's there in case, just in case. So we're hoping that we don't have to touch any of that with the support of listeners.
And I think, you know, generous supporters also don't necessarily want to give to an organization that is failing. We're still growing.
We're still growing, and we're going to continue to grow, and we're going to be here no matter what. 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. It's a $2,000 challenge from our generous past board presidents and officers. Jim Lomax here representing them. Please call and help us close out this fund drive. I think we're going to get really close to doing that with the match here. 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. Jim, I'm going to let you go and answer some of those calls that will be coming in, and we're going to pivot and talk to Dan Hoost about what's going on in Sullivan County government. Dan, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. Such distinguished company.
Well, yes, you've got presidents and everything. Mm-hmm. Are you talking about me?
Oh, no.
No, okay.
Sorry, Jim.
Not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're a distinguished company, too, just in a different way. You have the distinguished graying hair like I do.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for visualizing that for our listeners.
At least you have hair.
I guess there is that. Let's talk about the legislature. They did meet yesterday, and talk about some of the folks talking yesterday. Some powerful speeches. One of them I want to focus on first. It's Disability Pride Month, and Bethel resident Lee Karasik, if I'm saying that correctly.
Karasik
spoke in front of the legislature. What did Lee say?
He made some very pointed and blunt comments about accessibility in businesses and even county government offices throughout the county. Just when you think we're accessible, there are folks like Lee who deals with cerebral palsy who are like, no, you haven't quite gotten there. My mom has MS. She's in a scooter like Lee is, and I know how much she struggles, although how much there is out there to help. I mean, watching her shop for groceries, and people don't think she can do it on her own, but with technology, it's wonderful. However, we need to make sure that we're implementing that technology in our government offices, in our local businesses, and anything else that is open to the public. So Lee was invited by Health and Human Services Committee Chair Kat Scott to come speak because July is Disability Pride Month, and she read a resolution to that effect at the legislature, basically declaring that in Sullivan County, yes, we are going to observe that. Of course, as Lee said, that's all wonderful and good, but you need to turn those words into action as well.
And just to clarify, in case some folks might be confused, June was Pride Month, celebrating LGBTQ,
right.
Celebration of that. Disability Pride Month is celebrating folks in the disability community to promote inclusion and equality. It's not necessarily about folks who may
it's
be
LGBTQ.
It's not
about sexuality.
Right.
It's not about that. It's just
but
about
it is,
yeah.
it is
gay,
just,
straight, LGBTQI, plus whatever. It's
yeah.
for everybody.
But it is also recognizing the experience and struggles, achievements as well. People with disabilities at time. And it's nice that I feel like reframing that idea of disability pride, you know, feeling proud of you, who you are, mm-hmm. and what you've achieved and how you are moving forward having a disability.
Mm-hmm. But also recognizing, as Lee said, think about what it would be being in his situation for just 72 hours. He sort of wishes yeah. people could experience that, and they would get an eye opener to how difficult and challenging it can be. Just for example, maneuvering over a beautiful gravel sidewalk. Well, that gravel, if you've ever tried to bike over something that's got gravel, it slows you down with the wheels that you have. And if you're human powered, he has an electric scooter, but if you're just in a wheelchair that you're doing with your hands, it can be really difficult to navigate that.
Also this week, I believe, is the 35th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Anything at the legislature level to address some of these concerns that they're pondering or talking about or will take back?
I think eyes were open yesterday, so I think you'll see some things coming down the pike. We continue to do it like we used to have circular door handles on doors in the government center. For the vast majority of our doors now, they're more of like what you would think of a car handle, where it's easy just to push with a hand yeah. or an elbow. If you're exiting an office, you don't even have to turn anything. You just push the door and the door will open. Mm-hmm. We're looking to redo our entranceways, for example, the government center, where everything is an automatic opening door. We have center doors that are, but side doors that aren't. So, and these things are have been talked about before, but I think are going to get a renewed impetus because of Lee coming in yesterday.
Yeah. There's a new administrator at the care center, and there was a chance to meet that new administrator. Who is that?
Kayshawn Macquarie. Apologies, Kayshawn, if I mispronounced the last name, but I think I have that right. I know how to spell it. A really talented guy that we have. He grew up in Rockland County. I think he lives actually down in Jersey right now, is community poor guy. But he just joined as our fully licensed administrator of the care center. He is a county employee, and he brings with him a very impressive resume over many years of different upstate and downstate facilities, nursing, social work, those kinds of things that he's been involved in. And he just has this attitude of, let's all work together, let's make this better. I know people have had their complaints and issues with the care center, like they do with any nursing home, basically. And he's like, let's address those, but let's also recognize the good work that our staff is doing, the very positive comments that people who use the short-term and long-term stays at the care center have said of the care center. I was just there the other day to talk to him for a press release I'll be putting out about him. And just the way people responded to him, you could see he engenders respect, not through fear, through collaboration, through trust. And I just think he is going to be a great asset, already is being so, to the care center. I mean, this is a guy who started coming to the care center before he was even officially hired, just to understand better what was going on and introduce him to the staff. That was unpaid time. He didn't have to do that, but he did that because he truly cares. He really does.
And if you're just joining us, we're speaking to Dan Hoost, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government. He joins us every Friday with an update from the legislature. And also, we're in the final stretch of our summer fun drive. We're 92% of the way there. A few minutes ago, we heard from Jim Lomax, one of our past Board of Trustees presidents, issuing a challenge that the past presidents and some officers got together and decided to put together a pretty big challenge, hefty challenge of $2,000. We need to raise $2,000 to match the $2,000. Well, we've heard from a few folks already. We've heard from Mary in Narrowsburg calling in to the office at 845-482-4141. Thank you so much, Mary, for your contribution. And online, Anonymous, who said something that we want to read here. All that is needed for the triumph of evil is for good people to do nothing. Now is the time to save public broadcasting, Medicaid, life-saving assistance to needy people around the world, and above all, our democracy. That's Anonymous in that comment online in support of our fund drive and support of a lot of other things, too. We're here to amplify those things, and we're here to bring you the stories that matter to you, the things you rely on. Tuning in every Friday to hear Dan and that update and some of our banter is part of that, too. Well, maybe whether you like that or not.
People love it. Come on.
845-482-4141, WJFFradio.org. And I just, you know, Anonymous, you couldn't have said it better. So many things we need to rally around, and you need to stand with us here, and we need to keep moving forward, as Jim Lomax said a little earlier in announcing this $2,000 challenge from our past Board of Trustees presidents. So with those donations coming in so far, just $1,675 to go. 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. Help us close out our summer fun drive. Now back to Dan and what's going on at the legislature. There was a public hearing about the legislature's pending vote to allow an override of the property tax cap. How did that go? And just remind folks again what this is. This is sort of, is it procedural? Is that right?
Yeah. Years ago, the state instituted a property tax cap. It was under the Cuomo administration, which didn't allow municipalities in New York State to exceed a 2% increase in property taxes at any given year without a vote and a public hearing of whatever the governing body is. In the case of the county, that's the legislature. So, the public hearing, the first step in that, was held yesterday. There really was not much of any public comment, and what there was seemed to indicate that folks were okay if due to the current issues that all governments are facing due to decreasing aid and revenues, that to preserve services, if it has to exceed 2%, they seem to be okay with that, which I wasn't expecting, but that's what was said yesterday. The legislature now next week, I believe, at their full board meeting, are going to vote on giving themselves the option, just the option, of exceeding the 2% property tax cap. This doesn't mean it's going to happen in 2026. This just is as you said, a formality, a process that has to be undergone. The real decisions and discussion about this will happen in December when we're getting close to finalizing the 2026 county budget. I will say, based on preliminary things that I've heard and seen, it is entirely likely that this is going to be a very real, very serious discussion. But that doesn't mean that the property tax cap will exceed the 2%, or the property tax increase will exceed the 2% cap. But there are definitely issues. We're seeing a flattening, if not a decline now, in sales tax revenue. We sort of anticipated we were going to peak earlier in this year. So that has for several years now exceeded our property tax revenues, which is a good thing. We're not so sure that it's going to. We're not even sure we're going to hit the budgeted amount for sales tax revenue that we have in the 2025 budget. Plus, of course, just like JFF, the county is facing cuts to funding at the federal level that we're going to have to deal with, and we're still trying to figure out much of what that is and where it's going to impact. We expect more will be coming as the summer progresses. And of course, there are always escalations in costs. Yeah. Nothing ever goes down in price anyway.
Yeah. Well, just I want to ask you about that too. As the Senate was debating defunding public media and foreign aid, some of the senators expressed concern about not knowing what these cuts were and where they were coming. We had Governor Kathy Hochul in the 9 o'clock hour at a rally in Ulster County talking about these forthcoming cuts to SNAP and Medicaid. Do you have a sense at the county level yet of what this means and what these are yet? Are you being told, or do you have an idea?
Not for certain, but we are preparing for that. I mean, our social services, health and human services folks have been working with SNAP recipients to make sure that they get what they need. If we think there's going to be a reduction in that aid, I think the county might help and step in on that. Of course, we have wonderful other organizations in the area, food pantries and A Single Bite, that can help us with that as well. But for example, RSVP, the funding disappeared on that, but the county stepped in and we created the Sullivan Volunteers organization. Medicaid is the big one that we're concerned about, because especially with our nursing home, we rely greatly on those payments. If that goes away or is significantly reduced, there are going to be some very significant discussions and to be had, decisions to be made. So we're already planning for the 2026 budget year. We're going into that with a bit of trepidation, really, worried not only because of what we do know, but because of what we don't know.
And we've been talking about how this decision by Congress to defund public media, for us, our impact will be as soon as Q4, because the federal calendar starts in October. And so we usually get that funding in November. We had already planned for it in our budget because we're on a calendar year budget from January to December. So we know that what amount we're going to be impacted by in Q4. Do you at the county level have an idea yet of what that will be? Has that been communicated?
Not that I've been told. Yeah. Of course, I'm not as close to it as our Office of Management and Budget, but not that I've been told. But we expect there will be impacts. Oh, and another thing that I didn't mention too, the state is mandating that we basically create a new courthouse.
Why is that?
Because the current courthouse dates back to 1909. And they feel they've outgrown it. We could still use it as a courthouse. We're not taking that down. But they want a new court facility, the State Office of Court Administration, and we are bound by law to do as they say, and that's probably going to be another $100 million project like the jail.
When did this happen?
So we've been hearing about it for several years, but now it's become a reality where the state is saying, we want you to start work on this. So
is there a deadline?
We're going to be looking. I believe they want work to start by next year.
Oh, wow. Have you identified a site, or do you know how
well,
that will look?
Well, it could be, for example, on the backside of the courthouse where we simply create create an addition that would probably be the size, if not larger, than the current courthouse back where the old jail and the patrol building are. But those, of course, would have to be demolished. There are other locations. We'd have to do it in Monticello. That's the state has indicated that as well. So there are other locations in Monticello we've been looking at, but nothing that has been definitively settled upon yet. But we are starting that process, and there were discussions had with state court officials yesterday about some of the details of that. So we're probably going to have to work something of that into the 2026 budget.
I understand the age of the current courthouse, but what's the other motivation behind the state mandating a new courthouse?
The age, the lack of room to expand. There's anything further they need to do. But the state basically, I think, just like with jails, at some point or another says, okay, this building has just gotten too old, and it's more economical, in their mind at least, to now build something new than to continue just patching up whatever needs to be patched up in the old. So I don't know anything more than that. I haven't been in the direct contact and conversations with the state, but it is a mandate that we will have to do. And like I said, it will probably cost around what the new jail cost.
Yeah. So working that into planning for fiscal 26's budget.
Right. Yeah. And which will be, obviously, it's going to be some sort of bonding, some long-term debt that we're going to have to enter into, but that will also add to what we have to pay every year. We're still paying on the jail. We'll be paying for many more years on the debt for the jail facility, which, listen, the jail and the patrol facility, they're new facilities. They're wonderful. Our sheriff's office really needed to be in a new facility, but it costs money and it costs taxpayers.
Let's take a quick break here, and we'll be back with more from Dan Hoost, including an update on the broadband project in Sullivan County. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
I'm Brooke Gladstone from On the Media, and as you can deduce from the name of the show, we track the evolving media, the right and the wrong of it, across myriad platforms. But the truth is, the best thing about it, and I'm talking here about the fact-based media, the independent media, is that it's here at all. Over the 3 decades I've been watching, there have been countless bombardments and forays and brawls, but I've never seen it attacked with such focus and ferocity as now. Especially our own little corner of it, public media. Your media, we hope. You know, you could stand up for public media right here at home. Start a monthly gift or add to your existing one. Here's how you do it.
Give now at WJFFradio.org. Protect public media and stand with Radio Catskill. WJFFradio.org. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Stand with us now. We have a $2,000 challenge from our generous past presidents of our Board of Trustees. We were talking to Jim Lomax, one of those past presidents, just about 20 minutes ago. And now, happy to report another donation coming in from a Mary online donating. Thank you, Mary, for your donation. We also heard from Anonymous. And we also heard from, I believe, another Mary. Yes, another Mary who called in. Yeah, there's like, wait, hold on. We're rallying all the Marys.
There's been three Marys, right? Yes, Mary is not contrary.
845-482-4141, WJFFradio.org is where you can go to support us and help us close out this fun drive. If we meet this $2,000 challenge, we're going to get really close to closing that out. We have $1,525 to go now. Thank you for everyone's support so far. Let's close it out. 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, here with Dan Hoost, Sullivan County Government Communications Director. We are talking about news from the legislature, news about the broadband expansion. We've talked about this, and construction starting soon.
Next month. Starts in the northern and southern reaches of the county. They're trying to connect from the Hancock side down to, I think it's over near the Port Jervis area. So they are you're going to be seeing Archtop Fiber and their subcontractors trenching fiber optic through. There will be a few places where it's required that we have to do it on poles, but most of this fiber optic cabling will be underground. With the first things getting hooked up are our emergency communications towers, because that's where we'll be able to broadcast a wireless broadband signal from, similar to how you use your cell phone, but it'll actually be wireless broadband, a different kind of technology, but up to, I think, 8 gigabytes per second. I think I currently get like maybe 100 or 400 gigabytes per second. So this is going to be a huge boost in what's available in Sullivan County. It'll also, of course, make it more competitive, because most of us only have one or two choices of provider. This will be a new provider, and I am wagering it'll be one of the lower cost ones, if not the lowest cost. So service should begin in some of those areas in our northern and southern reaches by the end of the year.
End of the year.
Yes. And then we are under the terms of the $30 million grant that we got from the state's Connect All program that's helping fund this build out. We will have to have the entirety of that service done by the end of next year. However, that won't be the end of the project. Archtop has indicated to us they want to reach, just like we do, near 100% coverage of Sullivan County, both wired and wireless. So they're going to be focusing through the end of next year on getting that backbone into place, mm-hmm. and getting it to our emergency communications towers, but then after that, filling in the gaps.
So I mean, we've been talking about broadband and connectivity for years now. For years. Seeing this happen, mm-hmm. like, you know, shovels going in the ground mm-hmm. next month. Where can folks find out more about when they're going to see service?
Archtop Fiber is our private partner with this. They are the ones that are going to be doing all the operations, including signing up new customers, billing, repairs, all of that. So archtopfiber.com is the place to go. And I believe you can sign up to be kept in the know as things move along with Archtop Fiber. Obviously, we will continue to put things out there as well, but we are not getting into the business end of it. We're owning the equipment.
Right. So you own the equipment. There's a fund, some funding coming from the state. Mm-hmm. Just to be clear to folks, too, it's not free for the service.
No, the service will not be free.
Right.
But we anticipate it will be a lower cost, if not the lowest cost service of its type that you can find for the speeds that are going to be offered.
Let's talk about what else is happening in Monticello. Something nice about some interns that are happening. It's always great to have interns in the summer. It makes us like feel more alive and vibrant and younger.
Well, and also to mention to people that this is something available, not just during the summer, all year round too. We have internship opportunities, a very formal internship program in Sullivan County government. We currently have 10 interns, both high school and college age, throughout Sullivan County, working in all our different departments and really making a difference, learning a lot as they go along. And of course, as we said, injecting some youth and vitality into us old folks, right?
Exactly.
But it's available there through our human resources agency. That's who you'd need to get in touch with. We may not necessarily post that we have an internship available. I encourage anyone and everyone to come ask, because maybe when you ask, we'll be like, you know what? That office does want to have an intern, and we'll create an internship for you. It doesn't have to be pre-existing. So get in touch with our HR folks at the government center. Walk in, call them, email them, whatever, and see what opportunities are available any time of the year.
This seems to be an appropriate time to give a shout out to our Radio Catskill News interns this summer. Mm-hmm. Genevieve, Annie, Julia, and Jamie. They're doing great work. You can find their work on our shows live or also on the website at wjffradio.org. It is just great. Also, I will just say from the news perspective, to see young people approaching journalism in this way, like they're active and they want to go out and find how these stories are impacting people in the community. They're new to the community as well. And so it's great to see them just so energized and to see that there are future journalists out there that are going to keep bringing us the news and information, fact-based news and information that we all rely on, especially this local news.
It's how I started. Right. I was an intern, a journalism intern.
My dad didn't understand why I wasn't getting paid. He's like, why aren't you getting paid for this? I'm like, well, that's not how it works, Dad. Like, you go in, you get the internship. He's like, yeah, but I don't understand. Like, I'm like, it'll eventually pay off. It did. Look at me now.
Yeah, look at you now. Wow. You know?
Although we are fortunate enough to be able to pay our interns, so that is great.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, and your support is helping that. 845-482-4141, wjffradio.org. A few other things going on. There's, speaking of the youth, an emergency services youth academy starting Monday.
Oh, this is my favorite thing of the year, except maybe our holiday concerts we do in the government center. It's going to be a week-long program, Monday through Friday, of 14 to 16-year-olds. We have almost two dozen joining us this year, way up from the seven that we had last year, although most of those are returning as well and will be in a leadership role where every day they're going to learn about what our firefighters do, what our police officers do, what our ambulance workers do, what our helicopter response folks do. It is going to be fascinating. I am going to be right alongside them there having a lot of fun and interest. It's everything from search and rescue to visiting the inside of a rig, to understanding, we'll have the choppers actually flying in, I think, from both the state police and our local LifeNet helicopter. This is going to be things that they probably have never witnessed before, all in an effort to get them interested in volunteering or making a career in emergency services. I think we've accomplished that already with the folks who were here last year. Many of those young people are talking about getting into it. And that's the whole idea of this, is to say, this is interesting. This is exciting. This can be difficult, but it can also be fun. And do you have what it takes? If you do, you may just have a future in this, even if you're not going to make it a career, at least that you volunteer as part of it.
The farmers market coupons available for folks over 60. That is a great perk for folks going to farmers markets, getting a little bit of a discount there.
Yes, this is something that is open to people not only over 60, but also folks who are of less means. For a one person household, for example, though these are pretty generous. You can't be making more than $2,400 a month, and then it goes up from there depending on how many people you have in your household. But most people do qualify for it. I'll give you a little hint that we don't make you prove your income when you come in on that kind of thing. We're not that strict about this. If you're over 60, look at over 60. I was at the Monticello Seniors Club yesterday. I saw what it is. Basically, it's the honor system. We ask you to sign your name to it. You'll get a package of $5 coupons totaling $25 that you can use at any of your local farmers markets. Buying produce only. You can't buy anything like the wonderful pastries or wines or things that they offer there. It has to be fruits and vegetables.
Healthy food.
But that said, it's a wonderful thing to do, and it gets you to support our local farmers as well.
Yep. The passport event coming up. What's the passport event? Oh, passport.
What did you think it was?
I don't know what I thought it was. Like an actual passport. Right. Okay.
Yeah, you need your passport.
I thought it was like some name of like the passport event. Like, come see
us. I got you.
I don't know. No.
All right.
Now, I don't go anywhere. Now I go between here and Calicoon.
We visited La La Land long enough. Let's go back to reality.
Don't need a passport.
No, what this is our clerk's office is actually going to be open on a Sunday, August 24th, between 10 and 2, to help people renew or get passports. A lot of folks have trouble, from what I'm told, getting in during the usual office hours, Monday through Friday, because they're working or they're elsewhere. But they want a passport for, you know, you need a passport more and more these days, even traveling just in North America. So we're going to open it up by appointment only. For people who are looking to get their passports, you'll need to bring a photo ID, an expired U.S. passport or naturalization certificate or a birth certificate, and check or money order. Cash is not accepted. You can find where to sign up for that on the county website under the clerk's office, or call the clerk's office directly at 845-807-0411.
And finally, tomorrow, a Minisink battle commemoration at 4 o'clock.
Yes, 4 o'clock at our gem of a, I think, underutilized park near Berryville, right off 97, near the Roebling Aqueduct. It's the Minisink Battleground Park. It commemorates the only Revolutionary War-era battle that ever existed that happened in Sullivan County, which, of course, we're coming up soon on the 250th anniversary of that. I think this might be the 249th anniversary of the battle. But we are going to have as keynote speaker there our own District 9 legislator, Terry Blosser Bernardo, who is a daughter of the American Revolution, meaning she has an ancestor who fought there. So I think what she's going to have to say is going to be interesting. 4 o'clock tomorrow at the Battleground Park. It is something, in my opinion, not to be missed.
Dan Hoost is communications director from Sullivan County Government. He joins us every Friday. Dan, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
I want to just give an update to folks on where we are with that $2,000 challenge, generously presented by our past presidents of our board of trustees. We are hearing from folks. Thank you so much to who we've been talking to. Let's see, Monroe, Carol from Monroe called in. Thank you, Carol. Also, Erica online donating. Erica saying, I enjoy listening, especially while in my car. The shows are always intelligent and educational.
Wow.
Thank you for that, Erica. And also, someone named Daniel Rigney. Do you know that name?
I know Dan, of course. All us Dans know one another.
Dan Rigney, one of our great friends here, former general manager, now at SUNY Sullivan, says, in honor of general manager Tim Bruno and the rest of the hardworking staff at WJFF, yes, who keep the lights on and the transmitter hot day after day. Thank you so much for that, Dan. You know how to keep a hot transmitter going, of course. 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. We're down to $1,410 to go on this challenge.
Wow.
So call us 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. Help us meet this $2,000 challenge. Your match of $2,000 makes it $4,000. And we're going to be really, really close to making that goal of our summer fund drive today. Donate right now. We'll take a quick break. And when we come back, the latest from the DVAA, the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance, it's Upstate Art Weekend, and we're going to talk to two artists who are participating next. This is Radio Chatskill.
When I sit down for an interview, I'm thinking about you. I'm Mary Louise Kelly from NPR. Not every day, but on the best ones, journalists get to ask people in power questions and hold them to account. There is a reason that freedom of the press is enshrined in the Constitution. At home and abroad, leaders make choices that affect your life. Their impulses and decisions need to be examined in as thoughtful and rigorous an interview as possible. Now, journalists don't do this work to score political points. We do it in the service of asking tough questions on your behalf so you and the world can hear the answers, or lack thereof. That is both a privilege and a responsibility. When you donate to this NPR station, you support journalism that does not back down. Here is how to give and how to help public radio hold powerful people to account.
Donate now at WJFFradio.org. Thank you.
Radio Catskill isn't just your source of news and entertainment. It's a community hub.
You get to hear from people in the community through their own voices. Hearing it from the source is the best way to get the facts.
I listen to Radio Catskill because it's an indispensable source of local news, local culture, local music. It's really a glimpse into everything you need to know about the Catskills and the local area.
We love Radio Catskill. It gives a lot of great programming.
It's a forum for diverse voices, and we need you to keep this mission of public service going strong.
I listen to Radio Catskill because it's very informative, educational, and so many great people that are telling our stories locally.
I just think it's very fun and personable. I feel like Radio Catskill keeps all the tunes alive, and I love all the coverage that you guys do for the schools as well.
I listen to Radio Catskill for the variety. I love the news, and I love all the different music programs that you offer. I love it all.
Your support funds local news, strengthens local culture, and keeps neighbors connected and informed.
You get information from your actual area, which is sometimes very hard to find out about.
I know what my neighbors are thinking about, what they care about. It means that I'm not just a person living in an area, I'm actually part of a community.
The news is good because I like local. I like to hear what's going on in my area. You don't hear that a lot from anyone else.
Your donation is more important than ever. We need to raise $55,000 by July 18th, and you can make it happen. Give now at WJFFradio.org. Thanks.
Or you can call us at 845-482-4141. Guess when July 18th is. That's today. We are very close to meeting that goal of $55,000. We are at 93% of the way. And we can get that much closer if we close out this $2,000 challenge from our Radio Catskill past Board of Trustees presidents. We are hearing from some folks. We just heard from another Mary donating online who said, so many many Marys have donated this morning. I had to show my love. Thank you, Mary. Now we just have $1,385 to go on that $2,000 challenge. If your name is Mary, you might want to donate. Your membership could be revoked. Call us at 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. Thank you to Dan, who was just here on the air donating. And now, $1,285 to go. Let's keep this going. 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. What's going right now is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and this weekend in Narrowsburg, art takes on industry as two original works make their public debut, each telling stories from communities living in the shadow of fracking. Presented by the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance as part of Frack, Crack, Boom, Bang, the project's a community-designed mural and a full-length concept album aim to amplify voices from the front lines of extraction. Joining us now are Swedish artist and architect Frida Fåberg and producer-musician Jordan Temchak, who are part of this, and it's also part of Upstate Art Weekend, celebrating creativity across the region. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Frida, I want to start with you about your mural. Talk about how it responds to the personal stories from people living near fracking sites. And how did you approach translating these stories into your medium?
Well, first of all, I just need to mention that it was done in collaboration with Kayla Jolin, who unfortunately wasn't able to be on this call. Our approach to creating murals is through like full-on community participation. So stories had already been gathered by Jill Hunkler from the Ohio Valley Allies. Sorry, I think. And we used these stories from the people in Ohio Valley as the base for a visualization workshop. We had people come, watch the stories, watch the videos, and then discuss like what does these stories mean to you? How can this be further told? And working with the groups to kind of like visualize different ways to tell the stories. And then we did our little magic, came up with a cohesive design, and then we have had community participants help us out in painting the mural over a week leading up to this.
And Jordan, you know, that's a visual medium. You have the album. How do you translate that into the sound?
Sure. Yeah, we also started by working with Jill Hunkler and the Ohio Valley Allies, and wanted to see what her part of the story was. We also spent a lot of time with the Exposure podcast, which is co-hosted by Jill Hunkler and Stuart Day, and so we visited Jill in Barnesville, Ohio, and we recorded a few of her mantra songs, she calls them, and she plays she studied extensively with indigenous cultures all around the world, learning healing and medicine things and ceremonies, but also music and ceremonial songs. And so she's taken those sounds and influences and experiences to her drumming, and but she also, you know, creates these own pieces. And so that's what we recorded, was a few of her pieces, and then we use that as a foundation for kind of the base of the sound. And part of the concept of the album is Jill's voice and character and drum sort of represents Mother Earth. And then we have another guest artist on the album, Willow Gatewood, who's involved with the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance. And they make these really amazing soundscapes, I guess we'll call them, you know, that also weave together poetry. and the recordings are captured using electronic instruments and run through synthesizers and stuff. And so it's taking data and turning it into music, and it's really fascinating. And so that character represents the Earth Doctor. And then Rumble and Scream, which is my own band, we are representing Mankind on the album. And so we're just kind of giving voice to these issues and concerns and, but also ultimately hopes of what we see as a better future, you know?
Yeah, and fracking is such a heavy subject with real human consequences. We are aware of it so much here in the Upper Delaware River Valley. How do you think that art can help translate that emotional weight of stories that facts and data about fracking can't? Frida?
That's a really good question, and I'm so grateful that this opportunity came up, because using art, I think, can both inform in a way that you might not get, I mean, from numbers and data or news. It's like you can actually get personal stories told in a different way. And I think, for us working with the mural, it became like, how do you personally relate to the stories you've heard? How can you further share them? But also, I think one of the many beautiful things with doing this was being out on the street painting and just having conversations with everyone. Because honestly, like, most people have a story related to fracking, whether it's work, like advocating against it here in the region, or just living across the bridge, or in Pennsylvania, or other states where it's like so present.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it goes also beyond the actual medium of the art making. It does create the conversations that I think are so important to have.
And before we go, for each of you, is that what you hope people carry away with them after experiencing your work this weekend, like that conveying that message and then spreading it out into the community? Of Frida, we'll start with you again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's yes.
Yes.
And especially we had a lot of young people participating both in workshop and in painting, and I mean, like, they're the ones that will carry the torch at some point.
Yeah.
So I think it's really, yeah.
And Jordan?
Yeah.
Yes, your hope for folks leaving and the experience that they take with them as they leave this experience this weekend.
Sure. I hope they leave with a new understanding of the issues and the concerns, and know that I've been in our piece, in the live performance aspect of it. I present this show from a character's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And our music is considered, we call it post-industrial mountain music. And, because we grew up in a time of so many genres that they just kind of all bleed together for us. And so, you know, we're taking all that, and as artists, I think my team, we kind of all consider ourselves just, you know, synthesizing our experiences and our feelings. And then with this project, you know, it's getting to take information that is really important to, you know, all of our daily lives, and giving it a new way to think about it is all I'm trying to do, and give you a way to just kind of not have to sit and listen to, you know, scientists talk for, you know, hours if you don't want to. I just, you know, put it in a song for you.
Yeah. That's Jordan Temchak, and we're also speaking to Frida Foberg. They are artists who are participating in Frack, Crack, Boom, Bang, Songs from Frackalacha. That's at the Tustin Theater in Narrowsburg tomorrow from 7 to 9. Doors open at 6:30. They will be there also on a panel discussion with the co-founders of Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, Jane Cyphers and Barbara Arundel, and with Jill Hunkler from the Ohio Valley Allies. Part of Upstate Art Weekend, there's more information about this at DelawareValleyArtsAlliance.org. Hope you guys have a great presentation and conversation tomorrow. Thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
And before we go, we're going to check in on where we are with our challenge from our great past presidents of our board. We had a $2,000 challenge issued just at the beginning of the show today. And we are, let's see, $1,125 to go. Thank you so much to everyone that's called in or gone online. The latest folks doing so are Kelvin online. And also we heard from Anne Louise, who donated online. Thank you so much, Anne Louise, great friend, who also says Radio Catskill is more than a radio station. It's a trusted friend, a local storyteller, and a voice that brings our community together. It serves as an educator, offering thoughtful interviews, local news, and music that lifts your spirit, helping us stay curious, compassionate, and connected. And Louise, that's amazing. Thank you so much. That is literally what we're here to do. And we're glad we're your trusted friend, too. And we want to continue being that local storyteller and that voice that connects our community. We are here to keep you connected. We are here to bring you those stories, to tell you about that great artwork concerning fracking, something that we're all aware of in our region that's happening tomorrow, and how they're telling that story through art, talking to our local government about what's going on in the legislature. If you can't make it, they can come in and tell us a little bit more about what's going on there, too. That's why we're here. 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org is where you can go to support that. We have $1,125 to go on a $2,000 challenge from our past board presidents. Thank you to all of them for banding together. And thanks to everybody for keeping this station going. We've been going for 35 years and we will continue to go for another 35 and more. We're moving forward. That's what we're doing. We're not going away. Listener support has always kept us here and it will continue to keep us here. Continue to help you stay curious, compassionate, and connected, just like Anne Louise said. 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. So close to closing out the summer fund drive. That's our first step in raising some funds. That's something we had planned for that we need to do. Something we didn't plan for, Congress defunding us. We're going to tackle that, too, with your support. But let's get this done first. 845-482-4141. WJFFradio.org. That's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. I'm so grateful for you listening and so grateful for you supporting us here at your public radio station.
Hello, I'm Michelle Martin. How's the newspaper where you live? Thin? Getting thinner? Publishing a few days a week, if at all? You're not alone. Over the past couple decades, the U.S. has lost about a third of its newspapers, taking thousands of local journalists off their beats.
It will sell off more of its daily newspapers.
The largest news organization is shrinking.
It's laid off nearly a quarter of its newsroom.
And that makes it harder to keep up with our elected officials and what they're doing. A functioning democracy and functioning local journalism go hand in hand. We're trying to do our part, and that's why we need you to do your part by keeping NPR and the station strong with a donation today. And we thank you.
Your gift keeps local news, culture, and NPR funded and freely available to the entire community. Give what you can to keep it going. It's so important right now. Donate at WJFFradio.org.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Yes, indeed. Listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org or call us today at 845-482-4141. Help us meet this $2,000 challenge we have from our past Board of Trustees presidents. Thank you to them and officers as well who banded together to put this together and challenge listeners to raise that. That $2,000 doubles, becomes $4,000 once we raise it and moves that wheel of progress. We're at 94% of the way toward our goal of $55,000. We can close that out today and then move on to the work at hand of looking to fill that gap left by the rescission of previously approved federal funding that we had been counting on. But we're going to move forward and figure out a different way to bring you the news and information that you have always relied on. And we will continue to do that no matter what. 845-482-4141, WJFFradio.org is where you can go to show your support for public radio. It's WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. Radio Catskill. Plenty of sunshine today. Cooler, a high of 75. Winds 10 to 15 miles an hour. Clear tonight, low 52. Tomorrow and Saturday near 70.